try and call, it's too easy to track. Plus, you would have to use a name and set up an account. Email is the way. By using Quiet Mail with encryption, it's impossible to track our messages. I suggest that you email only me. I can then handle the relays. On this end, I have a new laptop that I keep near me at all times. This will work, Marco. Trust me. As soon as you're online, email and we can chat. Good luck. Grinch. March 5th. Grinch? A code or something. He had not used their real names. Marco studied the sleek device, thoroughly bewildered by it, but also determined to get the damn thing going. He probed its small case, found the cash, and counted it slowly as if it were gold. The door opened and closed. Someone was using the urinal. Marco could hardly breathe. Relax, he kept telling himself. The restroom door opened and closed again, and he was alone. The page of instructions was handwritten, obviously when Neil didn't have a lot of time. It read, Onkyo 850 PC Pocket Smartphone, fully charged battery, 6 hours talk time before recharging, recharger included. Step 1. Find internet cafe with wireless access, list enclosed. Step 2. Either enter cafe or get within 200 feet of it. Step 3. Turn on. Switch is upper right-hand corner. Step 4. Watch screen for access area, then the question, access now? Press yes under screen. Wait. Step 5. Then push keypad switch, bottom right, and unfold keypad. Step 6. Press Wi-Fi access on screen. Step 7. Press start for internet browser. Step 8. At cursor type www.quietmail.com. Step 9. Type username Grinch456. Step 10. Type passphrase post hoc ergo propter hoc. Step 11. Press compose to begin new message form. Step 12. Select my email address, 123grinch@quietmail.com. Step 13. Type your message to me. Step 14. Click on Encrypt Message. Step 15. Click Send. Step 16. Bingo. I'll have the message. More notes followed on the other side, but Marco needed to pause. The smartphone was growing heavier by the minute as it inspired more questions than answers. For a man who had never been in an internet cafe, he could not begin to understand how one could be used from across the street or within 200 feet. Secretaries had always handled the email flood. He had been much too busy to sit in front of a monitor. There was an instruction booklet that he opened at random. He read a few lines and didn't understand a single phrase. Trust Neil, he told himself. You have no choice here, Marco. You have to master this damn thing. From a website called www.access.com, Neil had printed a list of free wireless internet places in Bologna. 3 cafes, 2 hotels, 1 library, and 1 bookstore. Marco folded his cash, stuck it in his pocket, then slowly put his package back together. He stood, flushed the toilet for some reason, and left the restroom. The phone, the papers, the case, and the small recharger were easily buried in the deep pockets of his parka. The rain had turned to snow when he left the law school, but the covered sidewalks protected him and the crowd of students hurrying to lunch. As he drifted away from the university area, he pondered ways to hide the wonderful little assets Neil had sent him. The phone would never leave his person, nor would the cash. But the paperwork, the letter, the instructions, the manual, where could he stash them? Nothing was protected in his apartment. He saw in a store window an attractive shoulder bag of some sort. He went and inquired. It was a Silvio brand laptop case, navy blue, waterproof, made of a synthetic fabric that the sales lady could not translate. It cost €60, and Marco reluctantly placed them on the counter. As she finished the sale, he carefully placed the smartphone and its related items into the bag. Outside, he flung it over his shoulder and tucked it snugly under his right arm. The bag meant freedom for Marco Lazzari. He would guard it with his life. He found the bookstore on Via Ugo Bassi. The magazines were on the second level. He stood by the rack for 5 minutes, holding a soccer weekly while watching the front door for anyone suspicious. Silly, but it was a habit now. The internet hookups were on the third floor in a small coffee shop. He bought a pastry and a Coke and found a narrow booth where he could sit and watch everyone going and coming. No one could find him there. He pulled out his Onkyo 850 with as much confidence as he could muster and glanced through its manual. He reread Neil's instructions. He followed them nervously, typing on the tiny keypad with both thumbs the way it was illustrated in the owner's manual. After each step, he looked up to check the movements around the cafe. The steps worked perfectly. He was online in short order, much to his amazement, and when the codes worked, he was looking at a screen that was giving him the okay to write a message. Slowly, he moved his thumbs around and typed his first wireless internet email. Grinch, got the package. You'll never know how much it means to me. Thank you for your help. Are you sure our messages are completely secure? If so, I will tell you more about my situation. I fear I am not safe. It's about 8:30 a.m. your time. I'll send this message now and check back in a few hours. Love, Marco. He sent the message, turned the machine off, then stayed for an hour, poring over the manual. Before he left to meet Francesca, he turned it on again and followed the route to get online. On the screen, he tapped Google Search, then typed in Washington Post. Sandberg's story caught his attention, and he scrolled through it. He had never met Teddy Maynard, but they had spoken several times by phone. Very tense conversations. The man had been practically dead 10 years ago. In his other life, Joel had butted heads a few times with the CIA, usually over shenanigans his defense contractor clients were trying to pull. Outside the bookstore, Marco sized up the street, saw nothing of interest, and began another long walk. Cash for pardons? What a sensational story. But it was asking too much to believe that an outgoing president would take bribes like that. During his spectacular fall from power, Joel had read many things about himself, about half of them true. He had learned the hard way to believe little of what got printed. Chapter 21. At an unnamed, unnumbered, nondescript building on Pinsker Street in downtown Tel Aviv, an agent named Ephraim entered from the sidewalk and walked past the elevator to a dead-end corridor with one locked door. There was no knob, no handle. He pulled a device that resembled a small television remote from his pocket and aimed it at the door. Thick tumblers fell somewhere inside, a sharp click, and the door opened into one of the many safe houses maintained by the Mossad, the Israeli secret police. It had 4 rooms. Two with bunk beds where Ephraim and his 3 colleagues slept, a small kitchen where they cooked their simple meals, and a large cluttered workroom where they spent hours every day planning an operation that had been practically dormant for 6 years, but was suddenly one of the Mossad's highest priorities. The 4 were members of Kidon, a small tight unit of highly skilled field agents whose primary function was assassination. Quick, efficient, silent killing. Their targets were enemies of Israel who could not be brought to trial because its courts could not get jurisdiction. Most targets were in Arab and Islamic countries, but Kidon were often used in the former Soviet bloc, Europe, Asia, even North Korea, and the United States. They had no boundaries, no restraints, nothing to stop them from taking out those who wanted to destroy Israel. The men and women of Kidon were fully licensed to kill for their country. Once a target was approved in writing by the current prime minister, an operation plan was put into place, a unit was organized, and the enemy of Israel was as good.